theory as a code word enabled a certain interpretation of Marxism to enter academic discourse. You see how they cloak their agenda? They cloak. If you get onto one, they change it to another. I mean, it's this constant ongoing thing. If you understand the structure of it, then you can just see how they just change the labels. The structure never changes. The labels do, but the structure doesn't. So critical theory, then, when they came to America, they could go in and say, if they went into a university or something, that they could say, well, we're critical theorists, we're philosophers, we're specialized, you know, in this thing of critical theory. And nobody knew that was referring to Marxism. A transformational form of Marxism, a Marxism that was married to Freud. So, you can go online, and this is the Indiana State University website, and there's a whole section there dedicated to the continuing work of Robert C. Trojanowicz. Who's he? He is known as the father of community policing. Back in the 80s and 90s, he was the primary guy that put this thing together. There were others, but according to their website, and you look at his history, they claim that he was the intellectual father of community policing. Who was he? Was he some experienced cop for 40 or 50 years and led departments and knew all about police work? No. He was a social psychologist. Never worked a day as a cop, but he reinvented police work. Now, the whole philosophy, and it is a philosophy, of community policing was starting to be adopted informally by police organizations around the country. The San Diego Police Department started doing it about 1985. And we'll talk about the history of that in a minute. I want to address the philosophy. So we can go here, and this is called, the title of this particular article is called A Theory of Community Policing. Okay? And I have a wealth of material I can draw on and to illustrate this point. I'll just use this one because it's sufficient. There's a picture of Trojanowicz. Now, I've gotten emails from people that knew Dr. Trojanowicz, and he worked at, and I'm going to mess it up again, I know. He was either from the University of Michigan or Michigan State, and I always mess it up. And I've written in detail on this guy and his philosophy and this whole thing, and I get emails. They don't address anything. He went to Michigan State, not University of Michigan. Okay, well, what'd you think of everything else? He was a great guy. He played basketball well. Okay, well, big deal. He was a Marxist. He may have been a nice guy, and you could go out and have a beer with him, but, you know, it's still Marxism. Okay. This is one of his seminal works, Community Policing, by he and his wife, Bonnie. I'm sorry, it wasn't Bonnie. That's his one of his major collaborators. She was not his wife. But he and his wife, this was a work largely taken from a master's thesis project. So, in this article, The Theory of Community Policing, they identify the basis and the roots of what community policing is all about. And they say, the theory of community policing is based on critical social theory. Do I need to even explain that after what I've just said? I mean, it's so frustrating. But you know, I don't think there's another police officer on this in the country, or anybody else for that matter, that can go read through a short article like this and identify all of this as being Marxist. Just pulling some quotes out of here. Habermas stated that the experience of emancipation is the result of critical insight, etc. Well, who was Habermas? I think he's still alive today. He's at least the oldest surviving member of the Frankfurt School of that generation. And in his book, Theory and Practice, gee, that sounds familiar. The relation of theory to therapy is just as constituted for Freudian theory as the relation of theory to praxis is for Marxist theory. So in other words, he says Freudian therapy is essentially the same as Marxist praxis in its dialectical structure. All right? And they're quoting this in Community Policing. This is what it's all about. There are three phases of critical social science. There is discourse or dialogue into consensus. Enlightenment, in this discourse, you become knowledgeable of your socioeconomic problems. You become enlightened. And then the third phase is theory-induced praxis. It says it right in there. From O'Malley's book again, as applied to Marx, the term criticism has a threefold significance. It means the self-clarification, the clarification of others, and political action. those three phases. The unity of theory and praxis for Marx meant the inseparability of these three efforts in genuine social criticism. The same thing, I mean, this is 50 years earlier, the same thing that we're finding in A Theory of Community Policing. Philosophy as praxis is the activity of informed criticism. And what would he say to that? Continuing from A Theory of Community Policing, the role of the community police officer is equivalent to the role of the critical social scientist. So, and I'm going to I've done elsewhere and in other presentations, I've outlined just what the role of the community policing officer is, how this program has spread basically to virtually every police department in this country. I mean, it's not just some isolated thing. And here we have the police officer converted into the role of a critical social scientist. He's the vanguard, he's the revolutionary in transformational Marxism in society. And again, you know, the police officers that are in the community, it's no different than the teachers in the university down through the grade school level. They're pastors that are adopting this philosophy. It's in work, school, you name it. This isn't anything peculiar to police work. This happens to be my field of expertise, and I see it. I've seen how it's been adopted, at least in our department and elsewhere. Community policing is critical social science in action. I don't know how much clearer that they can be that the community policing program is Marxist. It's social psychology in the Marxist vein. And as such, it seeks to undermine. When you dialogue to consensus, when you enter into this discourse of enlightenment, what's going on? As you dialogue to consensus, you have to compromise. For the sake of group harmony, you're compromising your conscience, left and right. It doesn't matter what the social problem that's under consideration. And then finally, I just have a couple more slides here, and then we're finished. Trojanowicz goes on. He says, social control is most effective at the individual level. The personal conscience is the key element. The personal conscience is the key element in ensuring self-control, refraining from deviant behavior even when it can be easily perpetrated. Trojanowicz is saying here, as a social psychologist, that he knows that the personal conscience is the key element in keeping the community safe and having an orderly society. Okay? We agree with that. We can see that even back in the founding era, that the personal conscience is the key element. In other words, our government can't even function. You cannot have liberty in society unless you've got the personal conscience in full effect. So, do you think he goes on to say, well then, you know, we need to do everything we can to recover the conscience and to reinforce it, change culture to reinforce things at the family level to where we can teach our children to obey higher authority and to have a consciousness towards, you know, right and wrong, the Ten Commandments. That's why those things were taken down off the schoolroom wall, because they reinforced conscience. They reinforced the culture that supported that. He goes on to say, the family, the next most important unit affecting social control, is obviously instrumental in the initial formation of the conscience and the continued reinforcement of the values that encourage law-abiding behavior. Says it right there. So far, he's speaking our language. And this is from his essay, The Meaning of Community in Community Policing. Unfortunately, because of the reduction of the influence exerted by neighbors, the extended family, and even the family, social control is now often more dependent on external control than on internal self-control. And he goes on. You read the rest of this article. You can find it online. He doesn't talk about... He just mourns the loss of the conscience, but he does nothing to advocate rebuilding it or reinforcing it or setting it back in its proper place. The answer, he says, is to find community and to reinforce this collective idea that we're all in this together and that we can solve our own problems. And this is right out of the Frankfurt School. This is Marxist philosophy, that it's the community. It's human action that takes precedence over the ideal or anything that's transcendent. We don't need... I can sum this up. I don't need God. We only need ourselves. Community policing. This is the emphasis on community and community policing. And it always results in state control. Anytime I destroy property, this process has been at work. And I mean, people die by the millions once this thing is introduced. Hitler denied property to the Jews. Gradually, he introduced. They couldn't own property. They couldn't, you know, they couldn't have their businesses. And eventually, they ended up in the gas chamber because they were denied their basic right to life and liberty. It was taken away from them piecemeal. And it was all done under with dialectic philosophy. Our Supreme Court has done the same thing. Once they make the decision, the Supreme Court said, I can stand in God's shoes as the subject, and I can make the determination between good and evil. I don't have to follow any higher authority. And they ruled in 1973 in Roe v. Wade. They denied unborn their property rights, the property of their person, and the life, liberty. What do we got? 40 million dead. Every time this philosophy is introduced, millions upon millions of people die. All you have to do is look in every communist, every Marxist country that has adopted this philosophy. People die by the millions. Stalin and Lenin, Pol Pot, North Korea, Vietnam, China. I mean, how many hundreds of millions of people, because the state acting in for the good of the people, for the common good. We're going to take from others for the common good. We do not preserve and protect essential property rights. And you certainly have no right to conscience in those countries. The state says, we can tell you what to think. There's no conscience. It's slow and incremental here, so we don't really feel the effects, but we're sliding more and more towards this. And that's kind of a creepy thought. I mean, community policing is going to lead to state control? Oh my gosh. Well, if we keep proceeding with this philosophy, and I think we're well on our way, the results are inevitable. It's not even that it has to. Once you change your worldview, once your paradigm shifts, your world changes with it. And that's a quote out of Thomas Kuhn's book, The Structure of Scientific Revolutions, where he introduces that word into pop culture, the word paradigm. When your paradigm or your worldview changes, your world changes with it. And certainly, the model goes back to the garden. Look what happened when Adam and Eve's paradigm changed. Their world changed with it. I mean, the world was cursed. It's been degenerating ever since. So, I think let's go a couple more slides on the COPS program, just to give you an idea of its background. It was introduced in 1994 by Bill Clinton, actually by Senator Joe Biden, and it was signed into law by Bill Clinton in 1994. And it went under the title the Violent Crime and Control Violent Crime Control and Law Enforcement Act of 1994. It was known popularly as the 100,000 COPS program. We're going to put 100,000 cops on the streets of America. They didn't. I mean, it was just all a shell game. There's not 100,000 more cops. We've got less cops on the street now than we did then. That was just the sugared coating to sell it. And to promote the implementation of community policing. This is what it was really all about. And they allocated almost $9 billion to implement this philosophy in every police agency in the United States. It is part of the fabric of policing in America in the year 2005, period. And they reallocated another $4 or $5 billion around 2000, and they keep re-upping. We've spent gobs of money to turn ourselves into a philosophically Marxist government. The U.S. Department of Justice created the Office of Community-Oriented Policing Services, otherwise known as COPS, and 29 states established regional community policing institutes. Well, that's kind of the final overview of the thing. And, I've done this. I still don't know how to conclude, a presentation like this. I mean, what do you say? It's the scope is so large. How we have undone an entire culture, an entire country, and changed its worldview. We have overhauled by our own doing. I mean, there's conspiratorial overtones to this whole thing. Are you some kind of conspiracy theorist? Well, people that make that kind of an allegation that somehow you don't believe in a big conspiracy, there's conspiracies all the time. I mean, there was a conspiracy of people. Just because it's a military conspiracy doesn't mean it's a conspiracy nonetheless. There was a time prior to 1941 and December 7th that the Japanese High Command, they sat in a room and conspired to attack the United States. I mean, people do it, and they pulled it off. I mean, you can look at, Julius Caesar was a victim of a political conspiracy. They got together and stabbed him. how many times. I can take example after example on major global scale of one country or one region, one empire conspiring against another and to assassinate. I mean, it happens all the time. This is no different, where you have a group of people that hate one way of life, one way of culture, and they want to seek to destroy it. And if they can't do it one way, they'll do it another. There are people that hate God. I mean, it's in the Bible from start to finish. And you can even go so far as to say it's a satanic conspiracy. It's kind of strange. But the dimensions are spiritual, and that's what's going on. You know, we hide it behind a social agenda. But the fact of the matter is that we're undermining the conscience. And by doing so, we change the culture. And when you change the culture, you know, it'll be a violent, violent death. And if we want to recover it, you know, the struggle is just as bloody coming back the other way. I mean, we fought a revolution that was bloody to free ourselves from a domineering empire that wanted to remove property rights. Once it goes, it's gone, and it takes a lot of blood to get it back. So, you know, where do we go? The answer to this was, again, if the problem was found in the garden, the answer is also found there as well, in that, you know, God demands repentance. The cure to this is, in fact, we can talk about a conspiracy of people to do this to us, but the fact of the matter is, we did it to ourselves. We undid ourselves. We relinquished our conscience. You can say that Satan went after Eve and killed her. Well, he didn't hold a knife to her throat. He just manipulated the environment, and she cut her own throat. And, you know, the answer is really a recovery, is a return to, you know, God's law. And when Jesus confronted the Pharisees and everybody, he said, all you have to do, if you want a right relationship, if you want to reestablish the rights that you have in the Father, is just abide in my word. Obey. It's one word. Repent